Hi, I'm Dragan, and this is the Lunch Break Coach Podcast. I'm coach and facilitator based in Malta, and today I'm with Vanessa Camazzulli.
Vanessa is also based in Malta and works on employment branding. Am I correct? I was confused them. Employment branding.
Yeah. I think employer branding is the one that everyone kind of goes for as a term.
It kind of brands the employer.
Yes, it's basically what the organization is known for, but not from a product standpoint, but from the employee's standpoint. So what is their reputation as an employer? So that would be the overarching term.
Okay. Well, very interesting. I mean, I'm very new to the topic. I mean, I follow and have probably like a very vague idea what it is. And that's why actually I was very curious to talk to you about this. But let's take a step back, because we quickly jumped, you know, like a small mistake in my expression led to, you know, quickly jump on the topic. But I'm very curious, and probably other people are very curious, who you are, what you do, and you know, what's that important thing for you to be into this area of employment branding?
So let's say officially I am an employer branding and communication strategist, and I am also an ICF trained coach. But I primarily work in the space of employer branding, employee experience, employee communications, and I use coaching to support this work. My background is in psychology and business psychology from an educational point of view, but I started my career in pure marketing, but it progressively moved into more internal facing roles. So when I kind of landed upon employer branding, this was a very special moment for me, because I could use all that I learned in marketing, but really apply that to the kind of human psychology element within an organization. So it was like a perfect match for me. And I was very lucky that I managed to have roles that were very specific in these areas of internal comms, of employee experience, CSR, and employer branding. So that's how it got me to having my own, let's say, freelance consultancy today.
You look and sound very excited. Wow, there's someone who really loves and is passionate about what she's doing, and that's lovely. That's fantastic, and we need more people who are passionate about what they're doing. I mean, I'm one of them. I really love what I do, and that's why I enjoy being with people who share similar mindset. I'm sure there are a lot of questions and people, what is this thing, employer branding? How is different than marketing? Is this a marketing? What's the aim of this?
Yes. This is the million-dollar question, Dragan. Is it marketing? So let's take a step back. Employer branding, in very simple, straightforward terms, is how an organization attracts talent, engages talent, and retains talent. So when people talk about employer branding and marketing, at times there is this misconception that it is only about attracting, and therefore using marketing practices to attract employees. However, when a purely marketing approach is adopted to this, it is not always completely successful. Why? Because one needs to understand the human psychology element. So we are not selling a product, we are selling a culture. So we need to ensure that the organizational culture that we are, let's say, promoting is really meeting the needs of that prospect candidate, of that prospect employee. In cases where we just adopt a marketing, let's say, promotional style mindset, we fail to perhaps appeal to those human needs. Another aspect is that when we are not working on the internal culture of the organization, but we are marketing a very perfect scenario or a scenario that doesn't have, let's say, authenticity to it, which is where the branding element comes in. Then as soon as employees come into the organization, they are very let down. They are disappointed because the psychological contract is not being met, and therefore they end up leaving. I don't know whether this is something you've come across in your work, maybe not necessarily the psychological contract not being met, but any experiences around this with the people you work?
When you were talking, I had few examples, like flashlights coming and flashbacks to how of people that I worked with, joint organization that from outside look like perfect wrapping and, you know, were like the best place to work. And even when you go to their offices, they had all this, you know, fancy things. And then there's a lot of misalignment between what we see and what we get.
Yes.
And they suffered a very big shock, and they couldn't, you know, like get used with the idea that it's actually not that good and it's not a nice place to work. But the impression of everyone is like, oh, you're joining a fantastic company. They're fantastic, you know, they're the best place to work. And then it was the worst place to work for them. I've seen people live in companies like that with a lot of damage, to be honest. Yes. And I'll be fine if it was one person. I mean, fine, you say, okay, there's always an exception. But then I managed to see few people from the same organization that said the same thing.
Yes, this is extremely, extremely worrying. And I think one of the misconceptions, or let's say where it comes from, this kind of advertising aspect is from the term branding. I think when people see employer branding, even within the HR community, their mind really goes to that promotional aspect. And when we think of promotion, when we think of sales, it could be very easy to omit the full picture. Mm-hmm. So even in interviews, a lot of the work that I do is working with interviewers and recruiters to really articulate what it's truly like to work in that organization, and not only articulating the good, but also the not so good, because people want to make decisions and people are at different points in their career. I'm sure you have had people that are working in very challenging organizations with very, like, a lot of workload, yet they are equipped for that, yet they enjoy it. But maybe sometimes employers are scared to convey those elements of the role.
I've seen people who work very stressful jobs for very little money. They still stay with the organization because they relate to their values and the culture. And that's what keeps them, you know, alive there. Although they had other opportunities to probably progress, make more money, you know, like this little thing that really helped in life. No, they stayed years in a company or organization because they really relate to what the organization is. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And the values, you mentioned a very good point, bringing up the values. The values are the spearheading any of the employer branding. So I like to think of employer branding in three circles. So you have the values at the top with the company strategy, and then you have three circles that are connected. You have leadership, you have HR practices, and you have marketing and branding practices. Now, if these three circles of leadership, HR practices, and marketing practices are not aligned, are not within the value set, you will not succeed in attracting and retaining sustainably. Because it's one thing, in this day and age, it's not about keeping people forever. We know the climate is for people to move on, but it is to attract and keep those people that are truly aligned with your values for a period of time that makes sense for your return on investment. So this value set can only transcend the organization through the leaders. There is no other way, unless your leaders role model the behaviors of that the values are trying to convey, you will not have a culture, you will not have an employer brand.
You know how many questions came to my mind? and again, pictures. Like, okay, HR has the best idea, you know, and they're behind this. And then the leadership is very misaligned. I mean, it's one thing what they say, it's another thing what they do. How you navigate through this? How you align them?
Yes. So there is a lot of focus, especially, I mean, we are based in Malta, we're seeing this big, perhaps, shift towards leadership skills training.
Finally.
Yes. However, what we are talking about here is one step after this. It's leadership behaviors that are aligned to that brand, to that company. So it's not just about giving recognition, giving feedback. It's about embodying the values in your leadership behavior. So the leader of company A has different expectations than the leader in company B. And this is where we need to get to. So if I'm a leader in company A, I associate myself with X, Y, Z behaviors. If I'm a leader in company B, I am EDC behaviors. And helping leaders, also employees, but particularly leaders, reflect on this is the starting point. Many times we have values, very wonderful values, with our branding agency that comes in, puts them on the wall, comes up with fantastic wording that looks great on our career page. And then we don't bring our leaders in one room and facilitate a workshop in which they can say, okay, integrity. If I am a leader in sales, what is expected of me in integrity? If I am a leader in product or operations, what does integrity mean to me? What is expected out of me as a leader in operations for integrity? Once you build these muscles, once you build these norms in the organization, you start building a culture, because once the leaders are engaging in these behaviors and role modeling them, people underneath them are automatically going to respond. This is why we are known as Maltese and other people are known as English. It's because of behaviors. This is what creates culture. The same in an organization.
I see your point, and it's a very valid point, and I'm going to challenge here. Like, one thing I note is that all the organizational values and behaviors tend to vanish when there's pressure for productivity, profitability, and so on and so on. That's one thing that everyone tends to forget. You know, we take care of our people and then we burn them out.
Yes.
How this makes this, the employer branding realistic in this case?
Yes, this is such a great question, I have to say. When we look at very strong brands, and again, one brand, like brands that come to mind are, for example, hotel brands.
Mm-hmm.
Hotel brands have a lot of legacy. They have a lot of communication and emphasis on this idea of brand behaviors and performance management systems that are not only based on what you have achieved, but how you have achieved it. And therefore, in times of pressure and in times of change, they are almost institutionalized to work within the values framework.
Mm-hmm.
So to your question, yes, it does take brands that are focused on developing their values and truly believe in their values. Because if they truly believe in their values, the people at the top are sticking to those values in any situation. Mm-hmm. This is human, but there needs to be the tools in place to educate, to reinforce these values, writing them in an annual report and putting them on the walls are not going to change behavior. And this is where it comes to. Strong brands have strong behaviors enrooted in the values, irrelevant of circumstances. Actually, in COVID, we have seen fantastic examples in maybe global brands that really stick to their values. Why? Because they know that the values are guiding principles. So in moments of pressure and in moments of tough decisions, going to the values is actually the reference point. On a personal level, this is where coaching comes in to me.
Mm-hmm.
I am a bit of a coaching Nazi or a personal development Nazi. I feel this should be something that is embedded in our educational school system, starting with mindfulness. I strongly believe that when a leader has more capacity through coaching, that is, you know, accelerating their development, accelerating their capacity, then in moments of dealing with stress and aligning with the values, that comes much more natural. But if we're working with a leader who perhaps has not had this experience of really working on themselves, but has just been given the title because maybe they're a high performer, then this is where the struggle comes in. So it's all really interlinked, I would
mm-hmm.
say.
Mm-hmm. You put the element of coaching in the conversation, and I was wondering, okay, coaching leaders and helping them to gain skills, helping them to stay with their behaviors, and also helping them to coach the people that they work with. And that's I'm finding as a challenge here. Again, because of time pressure. I'm not saying it's not happening, but when people need to, you know, disseminate down their values and behaviors, that becomes very challenging. Because based on my experience, people don't have enough time to spend together. So what a leader can do around this, if they don't have a lot of time to spend together? Some people don't even have one-to-ones, regular one-to-ones, because they don't have time.
Yes. But help me on this one, Jergan, mm-hmm. because I am a firm believer that, look, I worked for organizations that were growing at like hiring 1,000 people a month, mm-hmm. growing at 40 to 50% a year. So I understand the concept of not having time,
mm-hmm.
but I also understand that when someone is able to really, really learn about themselves and really develop, then somehow they do manage. When there is a focus on personal development, then things link up. Then
uh-huh.
if there is a leader who's focusing on the personal development, then abiding by these behaviors, assimilating these behaviors, isn't such a large step. The large step is when there's absolutely no, let's say, awareness of what it means to be a leader beyond giving instructions or giving tasks.
Managing things, not managing people.
Exactly.
Not exactly. Leading people, actually.
Yes.
I your point is very valid. And I believe in the same. Like, if you want, and that's what my experience being a leader, you know, even if you don't have time, you need to stay with your people. You need to be there. It's just how you do it. And very often the problems start from the top, because they show this kind of behavior. And the other leaders say, okay, if the top is not doing this, why on earth I should stick with this?
Yes.
I see the exceptions, people who believe, and doesn't matter what happens on the top, they keep with the values and yes. the behaviors.
Have you had experience, Dragan, because again, sometimes I feel I share my experience, and that maybe it's only my own, but I have worked with some extremely challenging leaders. And when I mean challenging, I mean leaders that are really commercially driven.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk to them about people, they just genuinely do not get it. But what my experience has taught me is that once you start showing them the how, they start, I mean, you drip feed the how to work with people, somehow they come along. And I feel that it's their initial kind of their challenge is not that they don't want, their challenge is that they at times genuinely do not know how.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they don't know why they have to do it. I've seen people like that. Very like process, whatever, like it is, like, you know, profit process driven, who are not taught, or they never had a good example that leadership has a human face.
Yeah.
And when we bring the concept of empathy, for example, and like, wow, there's change here. What helps a lot is when we actually start working on them being more the coaching mindset and start listening more.
Mm.
So you don't need to deliver. Another thing I see quite often is people are not taught exactly what they need to do when they're promoted to a new role, and they keep doing the same behavior from, you know, they start using old skills like, oh, I need still to be technically aligned. Like, no, you don't. Your role is different. And I always ask them, what are you paid for? What the company is paying you to be here?
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I had a case like that for someone that just decided, I need to be technically able to help them. So, do you really need to? No, I have other people who can do this.
Yeah.
I need to focus on something else. So that was her, like, you know, aha moment. Like, no, I'm not paid for this.
Yeah. And this is why coaching is so amazing, because people really have preconceived ideas. Leaders have preconceived ideas. And sometimes it's not, you know, because there's a lot of conversation or chatter in the HR community at times that, oh, the leaders, you know, they never support these initiatives. We need to do more for our employees. We need to do more. Yet there's a way and a way. Helping a leader understand why we need to do more, you know, is vital. And when we talk about why we need to do more, why do we need employer branding? We don't need employer branding for people to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to sound harsh. This is work.
Oh,
we need people, you know, to be engaged. And what we mean by engaged is that we need high performance. That is engaged. We need people to relate to the company, to feel something for the company, because the company is giving them something and they are getting something in return. So when an HR person with good faith goes to a CEO who is process driven, sales driven, and tells them we need people to be happy, they cannot understand that language.
Hmm. And what happiness? That's always a very big question. How you define happy? I have specific, you know, think about happiness at work. We're not that happy. We had, you know, to do things, to work well, to enjoy being with people, you know, to progress, to grow, and to remain healthy.
Yeah.
If my work makes me happy, that's fantastic, but it's not necessary. I mean, yes, you shouldn't be sad and miserable at work, but just, I think the word content comes more into the picture. HR, I mean, because I've been HR ages ago, and I work with a lot of HRs. They have brilliant ideas. They understand why we need employer branding. They understand why we need them. When they go up, and they usually hear, it's not the right time for this, from people that are not actually ready to justify, is this the right time or not? Mm-hmm. Because they don't see. And unfortunately, all this human initiative, sometimes I've seen as an extra, not as part of what we do, but as an add-on. And that I'm very curious how people actually take such initiatives, especially leaders who we know are overwhelmed, a lot of work, and so, and they see this as an extra. Because let me just give you a context. I'm going to do something with the company. Mm-hmm. We get for a session and said, I don't have time. They open their laptop. Mm-hmm. And okay, the company is paying you to be here. They're not expecting you to work, and you come with your laptop. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do here? So how leaders take this, and are they seeing it as an add-on, as an extra that they need to think about?
They are seeing it as an add-on. At the moment, they definitely do. But what I convey a lot in my work is that it's not an add-on. It's a mindset. And probably a lot of work that is being done can simply be maximized. I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of money in reality and a lot of time and effort goes on employee activities. I am tired of seeing ice creams photos on my social media page. Mm-hmm. So clearly someone is coordinating that and someone is paying for that. Now, when we talk about creating impact through employer branding, the question is, what activity, what event can I do that aligns with who I am? Is it possible that ice cream is the only thing that aligns with all brands because it's hot? Is that really possible, the only thing? So in many cases, it's perceived as something extra, but truthfully, if one had to think a little bit about who are we as an organization, what are the needs of our employees, what are the key themes that make them, you know, excited, and then just do the same things that they're doing but a bit differently, then that's not an extra. But when they come to recruit, it's going to have a massive impact, because at the moment, if they feel that people are going to join their organization because they're offering it ice cream, everyone is offering ice cream.
Don't like ice cream, you know. it's not my thing of choice. I mean, like, I probably have 2-3 times a year.
Yes, so, oh my god, I love ice cream. Good ice cream.
I like good coffee, but that's probably like something to, you know, help me to select if I need to go somewhere. It's like, so what you're saying is employer branding is more than photo op. You know, it's like more than like, okay, take some pictures on social media. This is actually something you can't see on social media, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. But it's also differentiating yourself as a brand.
Mm.
Why should I work with this hotel company or that hotel company when the role is exactly the same?
Mm-hmm.
Why? It's only down to culture and values. And why should I stay is even more down to the culture, because salary can vary.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone enjoys that culture, the chance of having them for 1.5 years, 2 years, 3 years is so much more than having them for 1 year.
Mm-hmm. I've seen people going for a better salary and coming back to the company they left.
Yes, I actually learned that there's a concept called boomerang recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Yes.
Of it.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. And I've seen it first in investment banking many years ago. And, you know, people just go get an opportunity, capitalize on it. They don't like the culture, come back where they are, and everyone is happy.
Yes, yes.
Because they more relate to the other place and they feel more like, you know, they feel the link. I admire people like that. They can think.
Yes.
In a different way. And I'm seeing more and more people going back to where they used to work before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a good, and I mean, I think it's a healthy thing. And people who would come back kind of know the organization better. They, you know, from an onboarding point of view, they can perform much quicker.
Yes.
Better, much quicker. I wanted to ask you, Dragan, because I'm curious to see whether with your work with either organizations or kind of senior leaders, whether they've ever spoken to you about employer branding, or at least Have they spoken to you about the challenges around attraction and retention?
Oh, you better ask me if there's anyone who doesn't talk about this. About attraction and retention. And working with the new generation. This is my other, they go hand by hand. Like, oh, the new generation, they cannot stay. They don't want to stay. We don't know what to do. They're always different. Like, okay, you've been part of a new generation. So, you know, but everyone talks about the difficulty of retaining people. And not only locally, I work with people across the globe. It's always the same topic. Like, where are we going to find good people? And that brings a lot of challenges. So we don't kick out people that are not good and they cause damage, because then we can't find anyone else to do the job. So there's a lot of toxic environment as well. Just the fact that we cannot remove people because there's no one to replace someone.
Yes. And again, the more companies can differentiate themselves, the better. I mean, any research that you see, which is pure employer branding, there aren't across the world, there aren't so many specific, let's say, reports around this. But the ones that come out are saying during this period, the more you can differentiate yourself as an organization, the better you will fare in both attracting and retaining your talent.
Retaining and attracting talent is one of the benefits I see here. What else? Like, if you have to sell this to a company, you know, I mean, I'm using this. Like, okay, what I'm going to gain out of this exercise, apart from retention and employment, which is a big thing. Yes, it is.
There's also an extremely big link to customer experience.
Okay.
So from a sales, there's a direct link. If you have an employee that really embodies who you are as an organization, can talk about your organization, then the likelihood that they know how to talk about your product and believe in your product or service is so much higher. So there is a direct link there to sales and to customer experience, and definitely a direct link. This is a topic that we forget a lot, employee performance. Not forget, but we kind of don't maybe see it in the mix of employer branding. Because when you are doing employer branding, and again, listening to my language, not when we have an employer brand, no, when we're doing employer branding, we are actively communicating who we are as an organization. We are actively setting those expectations. When someone knows what's expected of them, when someone has a sense of belonging, which is articulated, not which is assumed, you know, that people know, then performance, it's a natural thing. Performance increases. I can do my job better because I know not only what is expected from me in the job, my tasks, which is why we need performance management, but what is expected of me as an employee, how I can act, you know, what is celebrated, what is not celebrated.
What's appreciated, what's not. It's, exactly. I mean, I linked with, okay, if someone believes in the company and the product, they're very convincing because they don't need to lie. You know, they don't need to invent. Because, you know, sometimes in sales, it's not a lie, but, you know, I put a lot of acting into the picture. If you don't believe in what you do, just have to sell the product and make it shiny and, you know, believe that the other person has like shiny object symptom or like syndrome to, you know, buy fancy things. Here, like I remember people who really believe in the company and they stay because they like it. And they believe in the product.
Yes.
If there's this misalignment, you find it difficult to keep people.
Yes.
So, a couple of other questions that are on my mind. Barriers, challenges, when you step in the company, how you engage the people to buy it. not, I don't mean senior manager, but I mean like when you step in and start doing your work, tricks you have.
So I do think that if we are really talking about pure employer branding in the sense of working on how do we attract and how do we retain, I do think that the companies that will gain most success are those that understand a little bit about it, or let's say have at least a seasoned HR person or team that are engaging in some elements of it. So those organizations are going to be more successful for the simple reason that employer branding ties everything in together, from your Christmas event and summer event to your recruitment ad. When it comes to those organizations that are struggle to understand the value of people within the organization, truthfully, there are a couple of steps before engaging with employer branding. And I'm a very honest and authentic person with this area. Because if the leaders are truly struggling, like it's a genuine thing that I'm sure you have met, they cannot make this link between investing in people and profit and organizational success, then when you bring in employer branding, how can this ever be successful?
How this is going to make sense to them?
This is it. So, for example, an organization that is of a certain size that doesn't even have an HR person, let me not even say function. Let's say if they themselves aren't people leaders, because in some organizations you get owners that are very people, have a very good people mindset, and those can really work with employer branding because they are like role models of this. But when leaders are not and don't even have, then let's put it this way. Employer branding is not the first step. There are some other basic leadership skills, leadership ideas, and HR practices that need to be established before.
So what you're saying is, in order for the employer branding to work, there are other things that need to be met before that. You can't just go in a non-functional, non-organized place and just place we're going to do employer branding.
Yes, I would say two scenarios. Either there needs to be some form of HR going on, or there needs to be an owner that is really people inspired and people and understand the value of leaders, because a lot of employer branding is not based on money. It's based on thinking, on this mindset. Like, as I said, they're still getting the ice cream, but they say, okay, what activity means more to our company? What is our DNA?
I see your point. Okay, as one of the features of this, I always ask people to ask me questions, you know, because I hate being on the row of the one asking questions. And you did this. And I'm curious if you have any other questions that you would like to ask me, because we can keep like that for long and maybe, you know, one day just jump and continue this conversation.
I think one question that comes to my mind is, have I convinced you about employer branding? Like, I know I haven't maybe delved into much depth, but what are your first thoughts about it as a coach and as someone that works with organizations in different forms?
I'm a very human-centered leadership person, you know, like I love this approach. I love human systems. I think there's a lot of benefit in actually respecting the people, not treating them, you know, the old saying, like, everyone is a number. I still see this less and less. I see more engaged leaders. across different continents, which is fantastic. I mean, so you don't need to sell this to me. I mean, I understand why we're doing it. I just, you know, because I've been into this work for a number of years and I've seen different things changing, economy of knowledge and different kind of management and leadership. And then, and I was wondering, okay, what's going to be the next thing after employer branding? Is this just one thing that comes? It's shiny, it's fashion, and then it's going to move.
Yeah, I had someone actually ask me this question. I think, yes, I agree with you that employer branding has become a buzzword. It pains me. But employer branding will never go away in its function if there is this symbiotic relationship between HR and marketing. For the future, for all the time, we need to meet employees' needs. And that is something that will never change. It might be called employee experience. It might be called something else. But if you are implementing employer branding in an intervention-based way, then it will never go. But yes, the term might die.
That's the, you know, the title might die, the approach will stay. And yeah, probably we used to do it one way or another even before, because I remember aligning with values, you know, leadership behavior, culture, and stuff like that. So now it's a little bit more systemic. We have like a system and someone spent time studying it and making it more digestible in a way and easy to understand. And it's very similar to coaching. People do coaching one way or another. And they, when you put the theory in the practice and everything in place, hi, I do this and I can do it better.
Yeah, exactly. I really agree. We've always been doing employer branding. And this is why I have this mantra of saying, stop thinking employer branding is for large organizations. Actually, small organizations have a stronger employer brand because the employer brand is really linked to almost every single employee is a representative of that company. Mm-hmm. The owner and the CEO are known. People go to them because of that. So yeah, every organization has a DNA, and that is mm-hmm. what employer branding is. It's just communicating the DNA of the organization, and it's aligning all the practices with this DNA.
Simply. Yes. I like the idea of all the employees are ambassadors of the company.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate goal of employer branding. The ultimate goal is that your attraction is happening through your employees organically. That mm-hmm. is the golden goal, not to have 1,000 likes on your social media pages. The golden goal is that your employees are your recruiters. Naturally, because they really have embodied the organization, they really understand why they work there and the value of that organization.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen the opposite, where actually people who are not happy where they are, they discourage people to apply for jobs.
Yeah,
because they're honest with them, so it's not a good place to work.
Yes,
because we trust people that we know. You know, if a friend of mine says, come and work in this job, it's fantastic. The company is great. Unless they have any financial motive, because this is also a thing. People get money when they attract other people.
Yes.
We're more likely to trust them. Mm-hmm. So I see the point here. Very good. Vanessa, thank you very much for this. I hope we maybe have an opportunity to explore the topic more. And because a lot of questions came to my mind, but I'm trying to keep this series, you know, shorter for abiding with what's the modern attention span of people. I think it's a little bit more than of a jellyfish, but or a goldfish. But I hope this was useful for everyone who listens. And meet again.
Yes, thanks, Dragan. It was great chatting, and it's good to get a different perspective. Sometimes when you're really in the topic and so passionate about it, it's nice to get people to ask you questions and really stimulate your thinking around it. So thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.